Hello, this is Rich James again, podcasting from the ODCE 2006 conference here in the Cyber Cafe, and I am here with Mark Taylor, who is our keynote speaker here on the second day. Mark, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Rich.
Now, when I interviewed John Seely Brown, I did my best to try to condense his talk into a few sentences. I'm not sure I can really do that with yours, but I was going to sort of take a curmudgeonly approach. I mean, you've talked about this generation that's moving into our high schools and colleges right now, and I've kind of been skeptical of what some folks have been saying and describing them as the millennials. But what I thought you were doing is really describing what you are seeing instead of a theoretical model, which I think is where that millennial label came out. Is that accurate?
Yes, and there's a lot of data out there on who students are and how they compare to earlier generations of students. And after we visited before lunch, during lunch, about two or three sentences in this smart equals fast world. I get that on airplanes all the time. If I can't tell people what I do in two sentences, then they don't think I have anything important to say. And my best summary would be that the traditional instructional methods that people have been using for the last few hundred years are particularly ill-adapted to this cohort of young people, and that those postmodern notions of their belief in their own subjective experience is what leads us around to our requirement to not just tell them things, but to help them discover for themselves and to experience for themselves. Now, I don't know that I get that driven home. I think I can tell what their traits are and where they fit, but I don't know that I make that point well enough.
Mm-hmm. So just to sort of summarize, what we have now are children who are the product of a materialist consumer society, and they are looking for instant gratification. They grew up in the world replete with political spin. And I guess there's always been political spin, but now that there's more
worse than ever,
that's even more amplified, and that is filtered. That's going into their expectations about how the world works.
Yes, and they've seen, and there's the expectation that things come immediately. They don't understand ideas like layaway or delay of gratification. And some of what I don't really indict the boomers on as well as I should is to tell them that we are kind of reaping what we sowed in the 70s, do your own thing, have a good time. And these kids have kind of taken that a little farther than we had anticipated. The entertainment culture, the immediate gratification culture, and the notion that it's supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be having a good time at what is unfortunately a kind of superficial level. When a lot of us boomers, you're younger than the boomers just for the record, went to college, introspection and analyzing ideas was kind of the bread and butter. One of the dirty secrets is that when we boomers went to school, it was a lot of middle-class kids who just went away to school, so we had a lot of luxury of time, and we would talk about ideas and dissect ideas. And we just don't see that much anymore. We see it all more from a consumer perspective of what do I have to do to get this grade in this class and come out, because that's what I'm going to have in 6 months is a transcript with a grade.
Mm-hmm. Just one more thing on this phenomenon of generational labeling and then sort of move on, what do we do with this generation? But my initial perspective, and you can relieve me of this maybe fantasy I have, but it seemed like this labeling was often driven by a need to sell something to a group of people. That if you can package it up and say what they are, we know what this day's Pepsi generation is like. How much of that plays into this generational labeling? And given these students we have right now, what are the advertisers and marketers thinking about? How do they reach them?
Well, Rich, you pretty much just right there summarize what is a core feature of cultural cynicism, which is that the only reason anybody tells you anything is to promote their product. And I'm not saying that's not accurate.
So I spoke like Generation X there.
Well, you spoke like someone who recognizes that in this culture, if anybody tells you anything, they're probably trying to convince you of something. But it's tail wagging dog. We see folks, and it goes all the way back to, don't get me started, Kodak was the first great one. who created the need for people to have pictures. Before Kodak started advertising Document Your Life, people didn't need photographs. And then after Kodak came out, everybody needed photographs. So they were the best at creating their own need. The generational labels are used by marketers, but marketers they're used by marketers to let the tail wag the dog, to create the image of kids are supposed to be wearing jeans that look like this. The hip kids in your cohort wear jeans that look like this, and then they try to create that, which is why boys' trousers are so low down.
We spoke during lunch about service learning, and your feeling was maybe I'm wrong about this, but that might not be the relevant pedagogy to use with this generation. What are your thoughts about that?
Service learning has a lot to offer students, but one of my points with this generation of students is, number one, they're very time stressed. They don't hardly have time to do group projects outside class, much less dedicate meaningful time to be involved in service learning project. So service learning has some problems in terms of the time expectations that it requires of young people. Another issue is the whole egocentrism and consumer orientation of students. How does this benefit me? Why should I do this service learning project? How does it benefit me? Now, old school academics would say, well, this is part of the assignment. This is part of the expectation. You just have to do it. You do it because that's what I say. Well, what I'm going to talk about this afternoon is the pedagogy that less information, more skills, and much more establishing meaning, helping students decide that they should care about this, which will drive the others. Too much education, especially college, liberal arts education, is all this information-based. What are the presidents in order? What's a Grecian urn? Whereas it needs to move on to skills and even farther along to why care. And if service learning can get worked into a why care, then it'll get legs. But otherwise, I think it's a tough sell right now.
I want to ask you about a disconnect that I've noticed, and I asked John Seely Brown about this. I work at a community college, and I don't see digital natives on my campus. And our mean age is 27, median 23, 60% female. But I don't see faculty coming to me saying, our students are way ahead of where I am. And in fact, it's just the opposite. And his response to me was, I'm skeptical of your observation, and that it's possibly the pedagogy that we are using or the way in which we are interacting with those students which maybe pushes out that skill set from coming into the classroom.
Well, that I have heard those kinds of observations from community colleges where I talk a lot about every class should have an online element, and they say our students don't have web access, and I'm not sure that the data supports that these significant numbers of students don't have web access. I think that the more advanced faculty are having difficulty because students see college life and their web life as being so separate. That may be one issue. Another issue that I'm still struggling with is being a digital native, but without having high levels of technological sophistication. Those of us that came up in the Apple IIe day before your time, you had to basically be able to do DOS programming to work a computer at all. And now young people seem to be good at working through menus and making choices, but as far as having a deeper technological understanding, they are tech connected but not necessarily technologically savvy. And so if instructors say write a paper, they're very likely to go look at the web. But if instructors expect them to show a higher level of technological problem solving, they may have more problems.
So having a familiarity and being able to play with technology doesn't necessarily translate to knowing how to learn with it?
Being able to play with it and use it as a resource doesn't, certainly for students who have not had it incorporated into their educational activities, they're not going to naturally see it as a part of their educational activities.
We've talked throughout this conference about the need to create authentic learning experiences for students. I wonder, do a lot of them know what an authentic learning experience is? Do we need to guide them that way, or do we need to allow students to pursue their interests and create teachable moments from that?
What too much of the data shows is that too much of higher education is just an expert faculty giving information that is not necessarily skills-oriented, or is there any real implication of why students should care? So authenticity in learning is, and I may be oversimplifying, it's just helping students identify why should they care about this? Why is this important to me? And there is a lot of brain research on how people learn in terms of changing brain synapses, but it's really more simple of start in authentic learning experiences. Start where the students are with their own experience, not with their own experience of, and I use algebra because those people struggle so badly, of what their experiences are in the world, of using any kind of math, whatever their experiences are, their own. Add some information, whatever you might consider teaching. It should be kind of information and skills. Then help the students see how can their world be different as a result of what you helped them put in between where they started, where what their experience in the world already is, and how their world can be different as a result of that. And that's how you create authentic learning, is help students lock it in there between what they've already experienced and how they see their world can be different. And that's the failure of higher education today, is it does not start with students' experience, nor does it help them see how their world can be different. It is a self-perpetuating expectation machine. You need to know this because you need to know this.
Mm-hmm. Mark Prinsky says we should approach teaching with the idea that we engage first, add content later. Is that part of that engagement, pointing the arrows towards the relevance, or creating the experience where the relevance is realized?
Those don't try to separate those two out. The engagement is both cause and effect. It's both process and content. And some of the work of Lee Shulman and the Carnegie Foundation in terms of how they engage students in professional programs, and I may even demonstrate some of those later on this afternoon, in med schools and in law schools. But that's exactly right. You know, it's you have to get their attention first.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned character education. I just wanted to relate a story. In one of the online newsletters I read, someone was talking about his experience in a chat room where he's part of a professional disc golf association, and some younger people got in the chat room and started using foul language and attacking people, and there was this big brouhaha that erupted about whether or not they should be allowed to be in this chat room, what kind of rules we should have. And this person said, well, in the online forums that I'm in, we talk like this all the time. And you brought up earlier about the need to model and set standards for civility and discourse. Is it appropriate to say, well, that's just the way they are, and that's okay in this space, and we need to respect that or tolerate that? Or do we need to begin to set some perhaps moral standards for this generation?
Well, those are the $64,000 questions right there. Where we are is a culture that has allowed all kinds of behavior without any real assessments of propriety or appropriateness. Now, workplaces aren't liking it, faculties are complaining about student behaviors, and adults, when they incorporate young adults into their areas of discourse like the blogs you're talking about, are distressed by the behaviors that they're seeing. And I tend to believe that for communities of people to function effectively, there have to be some norms of civic behavior. And it shouldn't be that hard for schools to help articulate ideas that honesty is important, civility is important, being trustworthy. And if you want to reach all the way out to helping the less fortunate and establishing a set of values that will be guiding principles. Information has a short life and skills have a short half-life, but values tend to have a longer life. And if we talk a lot about helping students become lifelong learners. That is a value. How do we help them appreciate the value of being lifelong learners? That's just one. How about civility? How about honesty? How about respect for other people? I could be a cultures in demise person very easily, but I think that colleges have complained too much about student behavior and what they're doing wrong without identifying what they want them to move toward and why. Look at codes of conduct. All the codes of conduct say, don't smoke here, don't walk on the grass, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Schools should start with, we are a caring community of scholars, and your behavior should conform to caring and community and scholarship. It's really not much harder than that. And then drive behaviors toward that rather than identifying all the behaviors that are not community-oriented, that are not caring, mm-hmm. and are not scholarship.
Right. So this generation now faces some tremendous problems. We have globalism, the outsourcing of jobs. We have potential environmental crises, looming possible energy shortages and wars over resources. Fundamentalism sprouting up all over. This generation have a chance of dealing with any of these things?
This generation will, and will deal in ways that we may not recognize right now. What I'm trying to do is to help higher education understand its incumbency to move students farther than they have in the recent history. Back when the boomers went to school and they were given these cohorts of middle class students, they didn't have a lot of trouble moving those people. They were part of the whole culture supported that. Now we're being identified as the folks that need to take people into this young adulthood, and our old methods are not up to the tasks, and not a lot of the new methods are being put into practice enough to make those things happen. I think there are great things in store, but I think that higher education is going to have to really fundamentally change what its content is and what its processes is, and get out of the learn the presidents in order and get into become a productive citizen.
Well, Mark, I know you need to go, and thanks a lot for your time here this morning and helping us see more clearly what's really been right in front of us, but maybe we haven't noticed because of our habits of doing things.
I do need to go sit in the lobby and wait on a limousine, but I do appreciate the time you've taken to visit with me.
Thanks a lot.